Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
Well, Bibi, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, says that the Golan Heights will remain under Israel's care forever. Why? What's happening in Israel? What's going on right now? Well, would you believe that President Obama, reports are, and Vladimir Putin, Russia's president, are coming into agreement that Israel must release the Golan Heights to Syria? Right now, there is the UN is trying to broker peace negotiations for Syria. And part of the bargaining chips is Israel. They put Israel on the chopping block. And they're saying that Israel, according to Assad, who's the president of Syria, he says this has to be one of the principal points in this treaty, that the Golan Heights is returned back to Syria. Now, if you remember that in the Six-Day War, Israel was able to capture the Golan Heights. This is Syria attacked. They lost. And the Golan Heights has been under the care of Israel for the last 49 years. And this is and such an important piece of real estate. One, it belongs to Israel. Two, because it protects the nation of Israel. It is imperative for the nation to defend itself. I want you to listen to this report, watch this report, as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu just had a security a meeting with members of his cabinet in Golan Heights. Watch this.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu held a special cabinet meeting on the Golan Heights over the weekend to deliver a strong message to the world.
The Golan Heights will forever remain in Israel's hands. Israel will never come down from the Golan Heights.
It was the first time since Israel gained control of the strategic plateau 49 years ago that the government held an official meeting there. It comes against the backdrop peace talks in Geneva regarding Syria's civil war that's threatened to overflow into Israel. Syria's foreign minister responded, saying that Syria is prepared to use military means to recapture the Golan Heights. Netanyahu said dozens of ancient synagogues on the Golan testified to its historical place in the land of Israel.
During the 19 years that the Golan Heights were under Syrian occupation, when they were a place of bunkers, wire fences, mines and aggression, they were for war. In the 49 years that the Golan Heights have been under Israeli rule, they have been for agriculture, tourism, economic initiatives, and building. They are for peace. In the stormy region around us, Israel is the stabilizing factor. Israel is the solution, not the problem.
Netanyahu said it's time for the international community to recognize after 50 years that the Golan Heights belong to Israel.
This is so important because right now, all eyes on the Middle East. Its reports are that Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is getting ready to go to Russia to speak with Vladimir Putin about this. But let's not forget that President Obama is also going to be in the Middle East in meetings and talks with Saudi Arabia. Listen, there is so much to talk about and unpacked here because there's no way that Israel can release the Golan Heights to Syria. Well, it's important to discuss and unpack everything that's happening right now in Israel. It's amazing because for a while, you don't hear too much of what's happening in Israel. There's kind of a quiet lull.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Israel is thrusted again into, you know, the spotlight, if you will, thrusted on the main stage. And you almost tend to think, you know, is this whole lull because they're strategizing something in the back? But there's something to say about Israel being in constant on the defensive because they're recipients of so many attacks, whether it's a rocket from the Gaza Strip, whether it's a terrorist bomb, whether it's an intifada knife stabbing, or whether it's political policies and agendas from rulers of the world, if you will, with their strategy against Israel, or whether it's the BDS boycott divestment strategy. I mean, Israel is
sanctions.
This is a picture. Sanctions. This is a picture of what it's like to be under continual attack.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oftentimes people want to live a life free of attack, free of troubles, free of any kind of difficulties in life. And oftentimes you're in a position where you relax, is when you become more vulnerable, because you loosen your standard, you relax, you become more vulnerable. But you look at Israel, a country smaller than the state of New Jersey, smaller than the country of Ecuador, and yet because they're on this continual onslaught of a multi-prong attack, they're always on the cutting edge of medical technology, of agriculture, mm-hmm. of defense, and they're helping the nations of the world. And now you have, according to Haaretz.com, a publication that's out of Israel, this is what they're reporting about the United States, and in particular about this administration. They say that the U.S. Department spokesman John Kirby stressed Monday night that the Obama administration does not consider the Golan Heights to be part of Israel. And this came one day after Bibi, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, spoke definitively when he said the Golan Heights will never, never exchange hands. It will always be a part of Israel. And it just seems that this administration, when many things that happen around the world, whether it's another attack, whether it be in Brussels or in San Bernardino or elsewhere, or the incident with John Foley where he gets his head cut off, the president's statements are minimal, they're small, they're not significant. But when it comes to Israel, there's always seems to be a definitive statement proclaimed and a position to be taken that's very clear. And it's always something that's not favorable towards Israel. And so it's like, why would in an American administration, a presidential administration, take this type of position against our only ally in the Middle East, a friend? I mean, Israel has been a friend from the beginning. And you think, like, what sense does this make? And what's unfolding right now is they're trying to push a peace deal. The United Nations is trying to broker a peace deal for Syria. And of all people, President Assad, who reportedly gassed his own people, which the President Obama said that if he had done this, that would be the red line, that we would act and intervene and step in. Well, he did it.
Crossed the red line.
He did it. He crossed the red line. And President Obama did not back up what he said. In fact, when he was given the authority and the okay, I guess, by the Arab League, the 22 nations in North Africa, to say, hey, deal with this, we'll finance it, he passed the football over to Putin, and Putin got involved. And now all of a sudden, these things come full circle where Assad is calling the shots, and he's telling the UN, he's saying, listen, a principal part of this whole negotiation for peace needs to include the surrender of the Golan Heights back to Syria. It has to be noted that this is an occupied territory and it has to be released. Well, Germany was the first country to speak about this, which is interesting. You know, again, why would Germany be the first ones to speak about this? You know, Germany was totally okay with Iran, these sanctions being lifted off of Iran and for basically the allowment for them to continue with their nuclear development and all their enrichment, all their type of stuff. Well, Iran and Germany have a long history, over 100-year history of working together. And so just follow the money, follow the money, find out what's going on. But Germany steps up and says, in fact, one of their spokesmen says, this is interesting, because they're talking about, they bring up that it's a basic principle of international law and the UN Charter that no state can claim the right to annex another state's territory. And this came from the spokesman of Germany, foreign minister, right? And so because Israel annexed the Golan Heights. The Golan Heights came under Israel's care during the Six-Day War when Syria attacked Israel. And then Israel, annexed and said, well, it's ours. And they had a lot of land. Actually, they gave some land back. The Sinai Peninsula, they gave back to Egypt for a peace deal, and it's worked out perfectly. But this they kept, and it was originally theirs anyway. And so they're saying, well, this you can't annex another, can't annex another, territory. You can't do that. Well, that's interesting because I didn't hear any of this outspoken outcry when President Vladimir Putin annexed Crimea. Right. What happened? Where is the outcry there? It always seems that there's a double standard when it always has to do with Israel. There's always a double standard. What applies to everyone else doesn't, it only applies to Israel. And now you're seeing, what does this look like? Why cannot Israel give up the Golan Heights? And why would you suggest that of all things? Why would we, our government, be in partnership knowing full well that to give up the Golan Heights would make Israel so vulnerable? In fact, I want you to listen to a major general, former major general in the IDF, who explains what happened when under a different prime minister, Ehud Barak, they actually entertained possibly for peace. Can we do this? Can we exchange the Golan Heights? And what would be, you know, the ramifications of this? Watch his explanation. Watch this.
As I said, 10 years ago, when we began the discussion about the possibility to withdraw from the Golan Heights, because at that time, the Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak was very determined to try to move forward. He did believe that he can or he would be able to achieve a comprehensive peace agreement with Syria. As a military, we were asked certain questions. And the first question that was on the table when we discussed this matter with the political level, namely with Barak, was this question. Can Israel defend itself without the Golan Heights, yes or no? And the answer that not only we gave, but the answer that Ehud Barak gave was no. Israel cannot defend itself without the Golan Heights. So if we cannot defend ourselves without the Golan Heights, how we are going to have a peace agreement if a part of this peace agreement, or the most important element in this peace agreement, would be a withdrawal from the Golan Heights?
So if you heard that the general, make sure this is available for you on VFNTV.com, on The Torch, that it's indefensible. That's right. Came to the conclusion that, you know, if we did this, if we, and because I'm amazed at how Israel is consistently, Steve, entertaining all sorts of options, all, you know, everything always seems to be open with them in terms of how can we just have peace.
That's right.
Israel always wants peace.
You know, and as we're continuing to just talk about Israel. Now, if you've been with us for a considerable amount of time, you've known the fact that of how we have talked about many of the events that have happened in the Middle East. And, you know, to not get just so focused on what's happening now, but to realize what has happened years ago. And if you remember when you were talking about specific statements from the president, remember when specifically he said that we're going to withdraw from Iraq in this specific date. And it was such a stern statement. And you're wondering, why would we be so bold as to, you know, basically express to the world,
tell our enemies
exactly,
yeah, we're leaving,
when we're going to pull out. So when we pulled out all of our American forces, all of our American troops from basically the centerpiece, which was Fallujah, Iraq. And when you look at the map of the Middle East, when we pulled out, what happened? You saw the enemy just come in like a flood, that there was this vacuum because if there was a lack of American military presence,
right.
Then birthed what you saw was ISIS. And you see radical Islam come in into the Middle East. They started to sweep west. When you look at the news now, you see basically, if you look at northern Syria, you're seeing Raqqa, which is basically now the base of the headquarters of ISIS. And now that just begins to just flow. And we've talked about Turkey being basically the hat of Israel. But if you go down a little bit more southern, you look at the southern border of Syria, that's like a shoulder to Israel.
Yeah.
And you're seeing all this. It's like, don't get caught up in basically what you're seeing now. You're seeing what you were saying before.
Potentially a strategy that has
exactly
been unfolding for
exactly
some time.
And we've talked about rules for radicals. We've talked about in regards to, you know, children of the light, children of the night. It's like, don't get caught up in that. Everything is being divided, which can be divided. So don't get caught up.
Which is interesting because, you know, here we are within President Obama's last year in office. We're about to have a presidential election in just a few months.
Yeah.
And there's been this international tour. You know, why be involved, knowing that you're exiting, knowing that you're getting ready to turn over the baton to a new administration? Why stir anything up that you can't necessarily do anything about unless you're trying to do something before you leave? And, you know, if you're trying to shift something before you leave, because you know that I'm leaving here and I need to turn all this over to someone else's stewardship, right? Yeah. But the president's been to Cuba. The president has been to South America, to Argentina, and now the president is headed to Saudi Arabia. And there's a whole bunch of stuff going on there that we're going to need to unpack and talk about, because it's not just about one isolated thing that's happening with Israel. There's a storm that's been brewing, and it seems like it goes to a low, but then someone sticks their hand in the pot again and starts stirring this thing up in a way that they think it needs to go. But I want to encourage you that God sees everything. And we're sharing this so that we can be informed, but also so that we can pray God's will upon the earth. That's what matters. We want to be in agreement with heaven. And no matter what the schemes and strategies of the enemy are and of men, that God's will always, always prevail. And so, you know, here you are, although the president's saying that he agrees that Israel needs to give up the Golan Heights, we have a Republican presidential candidate, Ted Cruz, who says that the government, he reiterated support for Netanyahu's comments and said that the government of Israel's, basically the Golan Heights are part of Israel's sovereignty. And it's dangerous for the international community to try to pressure Israel to abandon the Golan Heights to the chaos engulfing in Syria. I mean, this whole place is, Syria has been in a several year-long civil war with over 100,000 people have died, with refugees scattered all over the Middle East and Europe. And now we want to involve Israel, and we want Assad, a person, a dictator who's killed his own people, to be calling the shots, not in his own country, but all of a sudden the Golan Heights is going to be able to fix Syria's problem? No, it's all a strategy. It's all a plan. And why would we have two different superpowers coming together? It's, I mean, it's a scary thing when the United States wants to partner with Russia and come in agreement against Israel, our friend. We got to begin to start looking at, there is a bigger thing going on. I want you to see what the Center for Jerusalem, I believe, put together. It's a video that shows you exactly why it's important for Israel to remain to hold the positions that they hold when it comes to be able to defend their nation. And they do an excellent job showing you by land, by sea, by borders, why they have to have certain territories. Otherwise, they remain a sitting lame duck for their enemies, who openly, not secretly, we want to annihilate you. Right. We want to destroy you. This is a problem. Watch this.
Every state has the right of self-defense and to secure borders to protect itself from hostile invasions and terror. Israel is a small state surrounded by Arab countries 650 times its size, some of which are large bases of global terror. Only 44 miles separate between the Jordan Valley and the Mediterranean Sea. After the Six-Day War in 1967, when Israel was attacked by four armies on three fronts, United Nations Security Council Resolution 242 stated that Israel was entitled to new defensible borders to replace the previous fragile lines from which it was attacked. What are Israel's defensible borders? What are its essential security needs? The Jordan Rift Valley, Israel's eastern frontier, forms a natural barrier between Israel and the countries of Jordan, Iraq, and Iran. The Jordan Valley rises from an area that is 1,200 feet below sea level to a hilly ridge of up to 3,000 feet, creating a steep 4,200-foot virtual wall opposite any force attacking from the east. The growing threat of global jihad activity near Israel's borders requires it to prevent infiltrations of terrorists and weapons. When Israel left the Philadelphia corridor in Gaza, it became a highway for the infiltration of terrorists and the flow of hundreds of tons of ammunition and weaponry from all over the Arab world, aimed at Israeli civilians. The Jordan Valley is the equivalent of Gaza's Philadelphia corridor in the West Bank. To defend itself, Israel must retain control over the Jordan Valley. This is Israel's mountain ridge, rising up to 3,000 feet. It dominates Israel's major coastal cities, where more than 70% of its population, 80% of its industry, and all of its airfields and seaports are located. Missiles launched from the Judean hills pose an immediate threat to Jerusalem, Israel's capital. Israel's only international airport, Ben Gurion, would be in the range of even primitive rockets, while all planes taking off and landing would be threatened by shoulder-launched anti-aircraft missiles. more advanced weaponry would be able to hit virtually any point in Israel. If Israel were forced back to the 1949 armistice lines, the Green Line, the country's width would be reduced to a narrow 9-mile waistline that would be impossible to defend. That's why any future arrangement must include Israeli control over key areas of the mountain ridge and a demilitarized Palestinian state. Israel's narrow borders means a combat aircraft can cross the entire country in under 4 minutes. In less than 2 minutes, an enemy plane could penetrate the country's airspace via the Jordan Valley and reach Jerusalem. In order to thwart an aerial attack on Jerusalem, a hostile plane must be shot down at least 10 miles east of the capital to prevent it from crashing into major population centers. Therefore, Israel must be able to identify hostile planes before they cross the Jordan River line and intercept them shortly after. To defend itself, Israel must control the airspace over the West Bank. Israel's transportation arteries, and in particular the Trans-Israel Highway, enable travel and connection between Israel's regions. They also assure the mobility of the Israel Defense Forces in case of attack. Protection of these vital arteries is essential in order to ensure that 1. Civilians aren't victims of terrorist gunfire. 2. Regions of the country cannot easily be cut off. 3. The mobility of Israel's defense forces is not hindered in the case of invasion. To defend itself, Israel must control its main arteries of transportation. There is enormous uncertainty about future trends in the Middle East. Iran is determined to become the supreme power as the U.S. withdraws from Iraq. No one can guarantee the future of many of the current regimes in the region. Today, more than ever, it is crucial to ensure defensible borders for Israel.
When we get back from this break, we're going to continue to unpack why Israel must maintain defensive borders and over control over all these areas, as well as you're going to see something about the United Nations and see how they have changed. When the United Nations first backed Israel becoming a nation, there was 54 nations a part of the United Nations, and they had a different agenda. Today, the United Nations is formed with over 190 plus countries, you know, almost triple the amount, almost, you know, four times the amount it had before, and it has a completely different agenda. And you see that it's totally against Israel. You're going to find out in more detail what is this strategy, what is this plan. Not only that, but what's going on with Saudi Arabia and why is the president going to Saudi Arabia? Mm-hmm. Israel defending herself. Thank God for the Jordan Valley. Mm-hmm. You can see to the east of them, they have the Jordan Valley. So they have to be able to take care of that wall, if you will.
Isn't God so good?
God's good. Interesting that a tank can't get through there.
Yeah.
The southern part is a peace agreement that they've had with Egypt, mm-hmm. which has been for years now. I mean, decades, when they gave over the Sinai Peninsula. And that peace treaty has held quite a long time. And we're pretty hopeful now that General al-Sisi is the president, who's been really good to his own people. Yes. It's just amazing. And then, of course, you know, you have the Gaza Strip situation, which we're going to talk about here in a second. And then the Golan Heights up north. The Golan Heights is kind of to the right of Israel, if you're looking, you know, on a map. You have to maintain, you know, the Golan Heights. And then to the left is the Lebanon border. And the highest point there is kind of near Metula. I've actually stood right there to on that border, Steve. And literally, it's like a gate. It's like you can throw something over the gate. I mean, there's, you know, military personnel there, but I mean, it's very, very close.
Yeah.
But these key areas, you get the Jordan Valley, you have to have protection over the mountain ridge. Clearly seen in the video they've excellently put together that if they gave up that territory, they can just launch rockets right from the mountain ridge. They need to take control of the airspace as well as the transportation arteries. Mm-hmm. And these are just for basic protection. No one has ever seen Israel be the aggressor in any kind of military conflict. Right. Everything that they've been involved militarily has always been on the defensive, but never on the offensive. So it's an important thing to take note. But I want you to look at what happened with the Philadelphia corridor. I want you to see here. I have an image for you, and I want you to take a look at what exactly happened as soon as Israel pulled out. As you can see there, that line there where the arrow is you know pointing that direction. As soon as Israel pulled out of that territory, the Gaza Strip, and gave that over, gave it up, instantly,
mm-hmm.
instantly, all these weapons, all these rockets, tunnels began were dug underground towards Israel. And I believe since 2005, Steve, 2005, over 10,000 rockets have been launched into Israel.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we at that station here at that VFN TV, we had on our phone an app that would alert us every single time a rocket was being launched into Israel so that we could pray. Something Israeli technology, they developed this app to warn citizens.
It's called the Red Alert.
Red Alert app that mm-hmm. would help them to say incoming.
Yep.
This is exactly where it's happening. 10,000 rockets. And so here from the United States, we were hearing constantly, our phones were going off. Oh my goodness, there's another rocket attack. Hourly, all hours of the night. And for a while, I left it on because I wanted to empathize. It was waking me up in the middle of the night. But I wanted to go through that experience because that's what
they live through every day.
This is normal.
So they have less than 60 seconds to be able to run to a bomb shelter, whether they're home, they're sleeping, they're in school, they're in the middle of work.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they hear a siren and they have to run. We showed what had happened in the middle of a wedding, and the sirens were going off, and people were running just to seeking safety.
Yeah, so that you had that situation going on in the South. If you give up the Golan Heights in the North, and I want you to look at the proximity of the picture of this map here of where Syria is and exactly where the Golan Heights is. If you look at Lebanon, right below it, right below those two arrows is where the Golan Heights is. If Syria assumes control of the Golan Heights, then it's just a matter of setting up some rocket launchers mm-hmm. and from their own country then, because if Golan Heights is given to them, they can just continually launch rockets without even setting foot into the nation of Israel. So for anyone to suggest that Israel has no right to the Golan Heights after they were attacked by Syria, it's just ludicrous. And you got to understand, what is the strategy here? What is the bigger picture? Is it to take Israel out? And I want to encourage you to listen. God never slumbers or sleeps. His eye is always on Israel, and he is the true Iron Dome. But we can't be ignorant of the enemy's devices. Listen, the Bible tells us clearly that the enemy comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And if he could have his way, he would have removed Israel off the face of the map a long time ago. But he can't have his way. And we want to be in agreement with God's way. But I want you to look at. Actually, we're going to go to break. When we get back from this break, I want you to see what was put together that fully explains the United Nations involvement. Because right now, this is where you got to pray. Right now, the United Nations is trying to broker this deal to bring peace, quote unquote, peace to Syria. And all of a sudden, Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, is saying, well, part of this agreement must include that you give us back the Golan Heights from Israel. What the Golan Heights has to do with the peace of Syria, I have no idea, probably nothing. But the fact that Israel would be on the chopping block and that our president is in agreement with it, as well as the president of Russia, is of great concern. So much so that Bibi, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, is on his way to Russia this week to discuss this issue with the president. You're about to see a video put together by Prager University that really explains, really answers the question, is the United Nations unfair when it comes to Israel? When they first got started, the United Nations, did a mm-hmm. really good thing. It was 53 nations that came together and said, listen, we need to recognize Israel as a Jewish state. But since that time, it has changed, and it's like 193 nations now, and they have a different agenda. And there's been a consistent voting bloc that has formed. It's actually an Islamic communist voting bloc that's come together. It's these group of nations who have consistently have launched sanction after sanction, after human rights sanction, no less, mm-hmm. against Israel to try to tear Israel down. And so any suggestion that anything good can come out of the United Nations in terms of Israel is ludicrous, crazy, because they've repeatedly showed that they're completely unfair. But I want you just to look at the facts, and you can determine for yourself. Watch this.
There are 193 countries in the United Nations today. Of these, one has been singled out as an especially egregious offender of the organization's mandate to preserve and enhance human freedom and tolerance. Can you guess which it is? It has about 7 million citizens, of whom a fifth are Arab. The government is vibrantly democratic, its press wide open, and religious freedom fully respected. Women have equal rights and gays live openly. The answer is Israel. Here are some facts. 38% of all the resolutions of the United Nations Human Rights Council, the UN's top human rights body, that are critical of specific countries have been directed at Israel alone. The Council has a permanent agenda that governs every regular session. This agenda is composed of 10 items, one of which is always reserved for criticizing Israel. Between 2006, when the Council was created, and 2012, it published 48 reports condemning Israel. During that same period, there were 9 reports on Syria's mass killings and torture of its own citizens, 3 on Iran's genocide-threatening regime, and not one on, for example, China, which denies more than 1 billion people elementary freedoms. I could go on, but I think you get the idea. So we are faced with a choice. Either there's something very wrong with Israel that I'm not telling you about, or there's something very wrong with the United Nations that you should know about. Let's look into the history of both. First, Israel. Ever since its establishment, voted for by the United Nations, by the way, in 1948, Israel has had to fight its neighbors solely in order to survive. It has endured innumerable acts of terrorism, the most intense from 2000 to 2005, the so-called Second Intifada, in which children and other innocents were blown up in places like pizza parlors and buses and at weddings. It still suffers from rocket attacks against civilians from the Gaza Strip, which is controlled by a terror group, Hamas, whose stated reason for existence is to destroy Israel. Israel has developed a strong military and a web of security fences and walls to protect itself. Do these security measures cause hardships to people who must deal with this network? Yes, they do. Israel would like nothing better than to tear all these fences and walls down. But bitter experience informs it as to what would happen if it did. Is Israel a perfect country? Of course not. But it is one of the freest and most open societies in the world. That's Israel's history. Here's the UN's. In 1949, when the UN admitted Israel as a member state, the UN had 58 member countries and a clear democratic and pro-Western orientation. Today, the UN has 193 member countries, most of which are not even free. Among its many negative changes, the UN changed the principle of self-determination from a post-World War II, post-Holocaust human rights principle to a tool to wield against the West, especially against Israel. This reached its fullest expression at the notorious Durban Conference held in South Africa in 2001. The Durban Conference was billed as a UN world conference against racism and intolerance, but it turned into an orgy of anti-Israel and anti-Jew propaganda. Of all the bad actors in the world, the final Durban Declaration found one state guilty of racial discrimination. You guessed it, Israel. The Durban Declaration, however, remains to this day the centerpiece of the UN's allegedly anti-racism agenda. There's only one country in the world whose very legitimacy is questioned. Only one country that is openly threatened with annihilation. That country is Israel. And what has the United Nations done about it? Worse than nothing. It has itself become a global platform for anti-Semitism and the destruction of the Jewish state. I'm Ann Bayefsky, director of the Turo Human Rights Institute for Prager University.
There you have it. Those are the facts. This is clear. This is evident to all. And so here you have this stirring of the pot, if you will, the stirring up of the storm. Mm-hmm. And now the president is headed over to Saudi Arabia. We talked about that in the beginning of the hour. Listen, he's going to Saudi Arabia. Supposedly, Congress is working on a law right now to make it where citizens of America can actually sue another government. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case before. You weren't able to do that. And they're looking to sue Saudi Arabia, because they allegedly helped to finance the 9/11 attackers, and all this stuff is unfolding. Reportedly, Saudi Arabia is saying that if this happens, that they will pull $750 trillion of assets out of the United States. All this stuff's happening. In the meantime, Saudi Arabia just met with Iran and other OPEC nations to try to stop this oil production, to raise the prices, and just fell apart. What is going on? Listen, we want to continually pray for Israel.
Yes.
We want you to please pray for us. We want to pray with you. Steve, can you close us out?
Yes. Father God, we just ask you, Lord, that your eyes and your hands would just protect Israel.
Yes,
Lord God, I ask you, Lord, that you would just forgive the leadership of America for what they're doing and what is happening, and people are trying to divide Israel. I just speak peace over Israel in the name of Jesus, Lord, and I just pray, God, that your hand would just keep the borders, God. Give wisdom to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and all those in the Israeli Defense Force, Lord, and keep our eyes even fixed upon Israel, Lord, that the land of Israel would not be divided, and that we would get our hands off of trying to divide Israel. God, forgive us of what we are doing right now, Lord. We ask that you would just forgive us of the abortion in our land, that you would bring revival and send a third great awakening, Lord, in Jesus' name.
You've just been listening to the highlights from VFN-TV and the Data Radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Listen or watch more programs and check out the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. Don't forget about our VFN-TV app, where no matter where you are, you can take the light with you and share with your friends. We want to thank our sponsors and partners who make this program possible. Take the time and support our sponsors. You can locate them at VFNTV.com and select sponsors. If you'd like to become a sponsor or a partner, you can do so at VFNTV.com. VFN-TV and the Daily Radio Program, where we're keeping the conversation light. We'll be right back.